The big question, how does the president sell his economic plan?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Right now, we're going to ask the big question, and today it comes just ahead of President Obama's 8th White House news conference, his first since May. Reporters will no doubt hammer home everything from mosques to foreign policy, and of course, the political lip-licking going on in Washington because of low Democratic poll numbers. Most Americans want to know about the economy that's still running on too few cylinders. It's in this climate the president announces today a new top economic advisor, someone whose name is familiar in the administration, Austin Goolsbee. Another familiar name, to us anyway, is Jill Schlesinger, editor-at-large over at CBS Money Watch. She's with us live from New York to talk about the president's options this morning. Hi, Jill.
Good morning.
So how does the president sell his economic plan?
Well, he's going to chop it up into three pieces. $50 billion in infrastructure over 6 years, $30 billion in accelerated business deductions for equipment purchases, and $100 billion in research and development. Basically, he's going to say that the plans serve two purposes. $180 billion will inject a shot of adrenaline into the nation's sagging economic recovery and hopefully spur job creation, and the money will help address long-term needs like fixing the nation's rails, roads, and runways. He's also likely to draw a distinction between this and the previous spending by emphasizing that it will mostly be paid for and therefore should not add to the deficit.
And he'll use the word like infrastructure, right?
That's oh, yeah.
That a lot.
Love that.
So is it going to create jobs, though, Jill?
I unfortunately don't think so. Economists that I've spoken to say that the large-sounding proposals are unlikely to make a meaningful impact on spending or jobs. And although the recession has claimed over 7 million jobs, this is actually a long-term structural change. Private employment today stands at about the same level as 1999 due to technological advances, globalization, and corporate outsourcing.
Wow. Jill Schlesinger, editor-at-large over at CBS Money Watch, who joins us every Friday. Jill, thanks.
Thank you.
Let's do the numbers. European markets are mixed at the moment. Asian shares rose today, however. Positive Japanese economic news helping out there. Wall Street yesterday, markets were up just under 0.5%. The Dow added 28 points, about 0.25%, to end the day at 10,415.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Gather.com, the social network where people can make new friends who share their interests. People talking about today's news at news.gather.com.
The state of California a few years ago passed a law to reduce carbon emissions. Now there's a proposition on the November ballot to put that measure on hold until the state economy improves. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Eve Troh reports.
California's unemployment rate is one of the highest in the country, more than 12%. State Assemblyman Dan Logue says energy costs will go up if California makes companies reduce emissions as planned. And then...
we're going to have an exodus of businesses either leaving or closing. It's just not the right time.
Logue's Proposition 23 would suspend California's so-called global warming law until unemployment drops to 5.5%. and stays there for a year. Georgetown University economist Vicky Arroyo says energy costs have gone up under California's emissions law, but those extra dollars drive a growing clean energy market.
Why would they cut off this progress in an area that's showing growth when so many other areas of the economy are not?
The two sides of the issue are head-to-head in spending on the ballot measure. Two Texas oil companies funded most of the $8 million behind Proposition 23 thus far. Clean energy venture capitalists have put up almost $7 million to fight it. In Los Angeles, I'm Eve Troh for Marketplace.
Tomorrow, as you well know, is the 9th anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attacks on our country. There is a memorial service at Ground Zero in New York, and a few blocks north, rallies are planned in front of the now well-known site of a planned Islamic center and mosque. Ashley Milne-Tite asked some business owners in the neighborhood whether the center might help or hurt the bottom line.
For such a controversial place, the future mosque sits on a pretty dull block. The back of an office building towers over one side of the street. On the other, there's a bar, a supermarket, and a couple of smaller stores. One block away, Pemba Sherpa is huddling behind his tiny candy and newspaper stand. He says business never quite recovered after 9/11. Then some of his customers got laid off during the recession. He says the mosque is fine with him, but he's not sure it'll help sales much.
I don't think there's any difference now. I don't think any difference good for or bad for the business, you know what I mean? I'm hoping more people come down here, not only the mass, some other things also, you know, so our business will grow out.
Across the street, customers search through the sale racks at clothing store De Janeiro. Manager Vardwati Prashad says the Islamic Centre is boosting her sales even before it's been built. Muslim men already come to pray at the current site.
And especially now is the Muslim holiday. They bring the kids and the wives. They come, and when they come to the mosque, they come in my store.
She says the new building will help improve the area.
A lot of buildings over here, they close out. They're for rent. Nobody coming down this area to rent.
You can see abandoned storefronts nearby. Still, according to the Downtown Alliance, last year more businesses opened in this area than closed. Convenience store owner Alpesh Jani is happy to talk about how well he's doing.
I don't have any complaints. So far, it's very good.
But when I bring up the mosque, he turns away.
I'm Indian and I'm Hindu, so I don't want to give any comments.
A lot of other store owners wouldn't talk either. The debate over the mosque has become so heated, it seems even the economic angle is off limits. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
And finally, all the business news in a Marketplace Minute. Here's Bill Radke.
The head of HP, Mark Hurd, we don't know what exactly occurred. Suspicious expenses, flimsy defenses, the board wasn't taking his word. So then Oracle said in reply, we'll take him, Hurd's a great guy. Now, as of this writing, the two firms are fighting, and I still have no idea why. Then there's BP's claim they're not solely to blame for the leaking that came from the rupture and flame, and there's more fiscal drama surrounding Obama because he's defending an increase in spending, and if he relaxes some corporate taxes, the deficit grows. Is it worth it? Who knows? And goodbye to the CEO of Nokia from Marketplace.org.
Marketplace's Bill Radke in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.